Starting over?
All right, we're starting over. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Andy Troy Show, where you can sample all the great things New York has to offer. For the next 60 minutes, we'll not only clue you into some great things to do around town, but we'll also chat with some interesting local personalities. Tonight's show is a tribute to the late, great Duke Ellington, featuring his granddaughter, choreographer Mercedes Ellington, as well as the legendary percussionist Bobby Sanabria. But first, our shameless plugs. For those of you who haven't read my anti-aging book, Living Young, 32 Habits of Ageless People, there's no time like the present. It's always the right time to stay young and get healthy. Also, if you're going to live a long time, you might as well enjoy it. So check out my DVD, The Bedroom Workout for Men, on how to improve men's sexual performance through exercise. Both are available on Amazon.com, as well as my website, AndyTroy.com. Remember that if you bring my book to any of my events, I will be happy to autograph it for you. Speaking of which, our next event will be Let's Go Retro, our 80s dance party on Friday, June 15th from 6 to 10 p.m. at Culture Club, located at 20 West 39th Street between 5th and 6th Avenues. It'll feature $5 beer, wine, and well drinks. Admission is free. It'll be a great night, so come join us. Details for this and all my monthly events are on my website, TastingNYC.com. The Andy Troy Show has a fan page on Facebook that contains links to previous shows as well as pictures of all our past guests. Check it out by punching the Andy Troy Show into your Facebook browser. If you haven't heard my animal rescue song, Hoping for Another Morning, you can both hear the song and see the video by going to YouTube and punching Hoping for Another Morning into the browser. My good friend and producer John Anello, a.k.a. Johnny Mandolin, has a CD called La Voce Mia. Order your copy today at johnnymandolin.com or call E. Rossi at 212-226-9254 and they'll hook you up. Finally, sponsors, we want them. If you'd like to promote your goods and or services to our vast listening audience, contact the station or me directly at andyftroy@aol.com. Okay, some of our younger folks might not be familiar with Duke Ellington. However, he's kind of like the Beatles or the Stones of jazz. Talking about one of the real legendary names in American music, and we are proud to welcome to the show his granddaughter, Mercedes Ellington. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm good. Now, what was your first memory of your grandfather?
Let's see. One of my first memories was I was seated in the middle of the Apollo Theater audience. My grandmother, who raised me, my mother's mother raised me, and when the Duke Ellington Orchestra was in town, they would play at the Apollo, and I was deposited at the Apollo, and I would be talking with the band backstage in between shows, and then during the show, they would put me in the audience, and I could watch the show, and this would repeat itself the entire day. So I would see the show, go backstage, and talk to the wives and the band members, and we'd eat, and then they do another show, and I go back out front and watch. So it was a great day at the Apollo. So that's one of the first memories that I've had of my grandfather and my father and the whole family, which was my band, became my band.
Okay. Now, you must have dealt with a lot of really famous musicians back then. Which guys kind of stand out in your mind? Can you think of anybody?
Well, I know one of my pals, well, sort of pal. They were very friendly to me. They always called me, the kid. And I think Harry Carney was one, as well as Paul Gonsalves was another one, and but the rest of the band, they always look forward. Chuck Connors, the band, the drummers were always my favorite. Sam Woodyard was one of my favorites. So was Louis Belson, and Louis Belson was married at the time to Pearl Bailey, and so we would all talk and schmooze together backstage, and have a great time. And then there was a restaurant in the neighborhood called Frank's Steakhouse, and that was the place at the end of all of the things and all of the shows. At the end of the evening, we would go to Frank's Steakhouse and have yet another meal to all together.
You seem very well fed, but yet you're a fairly small woman.
Well, I dance it off.
Now, I don't know if you know this about Louis Belson, because obviously you're familiar with him, but he kind of pioneered the double bass.
I didn't know that. I knew that he was, you know, little things that I knew about him. I never knew that much technical things about the instruments, but we called him, or I called him, Squeegee Weegee. That was my nickname for him.
And what was this based on?
Well, everybody called him Squeegee Weegee. It just was a name that somebody said one day, and it kind of stuck. You know, it's like the nickname for Billy Strayhorn was Sweet Pea, because everybody said that he reminded them of the baby in Popeye, in the Popeye cartoon.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Well, there's a logical explanation to some of it.
Sometimes.
Now, what is his favorite piece of music? Obviously, you've heard a lot of it.
Well, I know everybody used to ask him, when Ellington was alive, they would ask him what was his favorite composition, and he would tell them, the next one I'm going to write, that's my favorite.
Okay. It's a lot of pressure on that next song, isn't it?
Well, he wrote a lot of music. He wrote about over 3,000 pieces of music. So ASCAP says his is the largest catalog that they have.
So he's a record holder.
Yeah, in several ways, yeah.
Is he in Guinness or no?
I don't know.
Because I have at least one former Guinness record holder on the show.
Yeah.
She swallowed the longest sword in history.
Yeah.
Well, not quite the same thing. But.
Yeah.
All right. Now, can you tell us about the Duke Ellington Society? Because I know that's our friend Les here. Les Schechter kind of introduced us, PR man to the stars. He's doing a lot of work with me. That's why I'm not very famous. Les, how did you get connected with Mercedes and the Duke Ellington folks, by the way?
Well, I heard about the Duke Ellington Center for the Arts, which Mercedes started, five, six, seven, 8 years ago?
It's got to be about eight years ago, yeah.
And she's the president of the organization, which is really dedicated to preserving the music and the heritage of Duke Ellington. And she's doing a terrific job doing that. And, you know, she's had a wonderful career herself as a dancer, first with Jackie Gleason, Drew Taylor.
Dancer. You're using up all my questions, Les.
That's all right. No.
What's going on? I'm not splitting my fee.
No. But and then a great choreographer. But anyhow, and I'm on the board of the Duke Ellington Center.
I kind of felt that I needed to let the younger generations, the current generations, know who he was, who Duke Ellington was, and more about that era, and more about the era of what I'm now calling classical jazz, as opposed to current nouveau jazz, and the differences, and what the strong points, and how the beginnings, you know, kind of historical, and who the greats were, and how they sounded, what particular thing were they known for, what they created, what they contributed to the music, and how it built up to what it was and what it is today.
Now, how are young people into this stuff or what?
Now they are. If you see the shows now, I've seen more stuff with big bands on. I mean, now that you've got dance shows on, like Dancing with the Stars, and you've got So You Think You Can Dance. You can dance, but you have to dance to music, and most of the music that you dance to is big band music. And like Harold Wheeler with Dancing with the Stars is a big band person. And Ray Chu from the Apollo was another big band kind of guy. But these guys kind of, you know, got lost in the shuffle, and some of them went to the West Coast, and some of them went to different areas, and, you know, just trying to stay alive. And so everybody's resurfacing pretty soon now. So you hear about the different instrumentalists and the different forms of this kind of music now more often.
Has anybody ever approached you about being a judge on any of those dance shows? Because there's so many of them now, it seems.
It does seem that there are. There's a lot of judging going on, you know. I actually have a sister who is really a federal judge, but that's something else altogether.
She's had people dance off to Leavenworth, I guess, basically.
But I have I've done on smaller scales and neighborhood things. And
scales, no pun intended.
No. Yeah. But on smaller versions of contests, of local things, of people who are trying to get started with companies and get some kind of play and notoriety and get some interest because it's not a recital anymore. You know, you don't hear that word very much in New York anyway. Recitals are usually the end of the year exposure of the dance of the system of the dance, everything that you've ever learned about dance in the year.
I expect that in junior high school, you know.
Well, yes.
When they make me put on my little outfit and trip over myself.
That's, and so that day you had a recital, so.
The memories.
I've never recovered from my first recital.
Really? What was that like?
Oh, it was so traumatic. It was terrible. I was a snowflake in the Waltz of the Flowers in the Nutcracker. And I was about three, and twirling around with my tutu and everything, just giving a direction, following. And they'd say, just run after that girl in front of you, just run, you know. So I've been doing that ever since.
So Duke Ellington's daughter failed as a snowflake and yet went on to an extremely successful career as a choreographer, which is
exciting. Granddaughter. But I had, well, my father, for instance, he carried on the tradition. They didn't know what to do with me after I graduated from high school. They said I wanted to go out into the world and dance on Broadway, because an athlete's life and a dancer's life is very short. You got to get out there and do everything really quickly. So I wanted to dance as much as I could, as soon as I could, but they wanted me to go to school, so they sent me to Juilliard. And so after 4 years of Juilliard, I came out, and my first show was West Side Story in Australia for 6 months.
West Side Story, were the Aussies into that? Was the language barrier a problem?
Somewhat there was.
They speak some English in Australia, don't they?
They do speak some English, but some of it you wouldn't understand. Like, they would call us bodgies and woodgies, and we didn't understand what that meant.
Was it difficult to perform on a diet of Vegemite?
Vegemite, what is that?
Oh, man. It's nasty stuff. No, it's an Australian type of food. That
they weren't into that then. They
eat only because it's Australian.
Oh, no. They were, actually, there's a very nice couple took pity on us, and they took us to one of the zoos, which was fabulous, because you are the one who are contained, and the animals are free. And it was the first time I had an appearance with an emu who snatched
I love the
sandwich.
Emu.
Yes, well, I didn't like him that day because he took my lunch.
It's kind of an Australian version of a
ostrich. Yes, but he's much stronger. If he kicks you in the leg, forget about it.
Oh, okay. Emu kicking is out for me.
No emu kicking. The Rockettes would probably have a stronger shot, you know, at emu kicking, but altogether.
Okay, we're going to have to go to a commercial break.
Okay.
But one of my listeners wrote in and wanted to know if your grandfather worked with Frank Sinatra or Tony Bennett.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to hear about that when we come back. Let's keep them waiting. Let's keep them wanting more. We'll be back.
Yo, this is Fat Al the Cannoli over here, and you are listening to the Chintani Broadcasting Network, high definition digital radio broadcasting to the world.
Hello, my name is Anthony Teresa, owner and producer of Blue Night Recording Studio in beautiful Orange County, California, just outside Los Angeles. As a guitarist, vocalist, bassist, session player, producer, and engineer, I have either played or recorded on over 400 CD projects. Let me tell you, it's not easy to record your own music. My goal is to help you to be the best you can be behind the mic and in the tracking room. We'll get the best possible sounds from your voice and instruments. Do you need musicians? I've got them. The top session players in Southern California and Los Angeles. Let's make your recording project a reality. You can contact me by phone at 949-338-0293. That's 949-338-0293. Or contact me an email at catduo@earthlink.net. Looking forward to hearing from you. Take care and have a great week.
Hey, Mia, Frankie,
hey, John,
Dad, where are we?
We're at Umberto's Clam House.
Umberto's.
132 hey. Mulberry Street.
It's the place to be. What are you kidding?
Little Italy.
Hey, are we having fun? Is the food good?
Oh, my God. The gnocchi, the marinara, the mozzarella.
I ate three times tonight. I can't. So much.
Well, Chantani Broadcasting loves Umberto's at 132 Mulberry Street. In fact, that's why we broadcast from here. When you're in Little Italy, come down and watch a live broadcast. Or tune in, and anytime you're around, come and eat. Tutta mangiamo, si!
Tutta mangiamo, hey!
Mangiamo.
Umberto's Clam.
Okay, we're back with Mercedes Ellington and the late Bobby Sanabria. He's not dead, he's just actually late.
But actually, Francis A., Sinatra's middle name,
yes.
Francis A. meets Edward K. They did an album together.
Really?
And also, my grandfather encouraged Tony Bennett to be an artist, to paint, because he said that everybody should do two things. And so,
do I have to stop Tony, doing four of the things that I'm doing and cut it down?
No, at least,
no.
I mean, he said, at least two. Four is good, at least two is good.
Oh. So, was Tony a good painter?
He's a great painter. He's an incredible painter. His paintings now go for I don't know how much, but he actually did the back. I went to see somebody, and he was in the audience, and he painted the back of my head, and I'm thinking one day that'll be worth a lot of money because he just sketched.
Until you wash your hair and it comes off.
I know,
yeah.
Right? Yes.
Yeah, okay. Everybody, if you've got to look at the back of her head, it is really quite eye-catching, to tell you. Now, who are some of the other members of the Duke Ellington Society? I think we've got one of them over here, a friend of yours, don't we?
Yes.
Is this Kent?
Kent Drake.
Hi, how are you? Nice to be here. I'm happy to be here.
Kent is a very dignified, classy gentleman who's just observing so far tonight.
I just want to clear up one thing.
There's only one thing I've screwed up so far.
No. I just want to make it known that we are not the Duke Ellington Society. We are the Duke Ellington Center for the Arts. There is a difference. We are big supporters of Duke Ellington Society.
Oh, okay.
But we're not as old as an organization as they are. But we kind of have similar
goals
and ideas.
Yeah.
But we are different.
Well, this is fascinating. Someone wrote in that they have a book of Tony Bennett's art.
Yes.
So this actually was put down on paper. Okay.
Ah, yes.
Very good.
Yeah.
Okay.
And sometimes I think he has exhibits.
Okay. Well, where can I go to see some Tony Bennett stuff?
Well, I don't know if there may be something in some of the local biggies, like at the Met or at MoMA, but and sometimes they have special exhibits. It depends. Sometimes ASCAP does, they do special things to raise money for musicians, and so they'll have his things there. So.
Okay. Now, you guys have a big concert coming up, so we want to put some time into that. I believe that's June 8th, correct?
Yes.
And this is in the Bronx?
This is the El Bronx, as we say.
Okay.
We call it El Bronx.
Okay. That's where that baseball team plays, don't they?
I think that's the. I wouldn't know that much about sports because there's a certain competition between sports and dance. You know, I think they get overshot. They get more time than the dance and the entertainment world. But you know, that's the way it is in America. So I'll give that one to them. But we're going to be performing at Lehman College. and which is a wonderful space at the Lovinger Theater. And it's a great auditorium, and it's going to be big enough to do what we want to do, which we're having two big bands on stage at the same time. We have three sets. We have one set from one band, one set from another band, and then a last set that both bands take place. And the, of course, the other band, our band, is the Duke Ellington Center Big Band, and the other band is the most fabulous Bobby Sanabria Big Band, Latin Big Band. So it combines the two different types of the jazz music and the Latin music. And then we have an arranger, Frank Owens, who has done for us a wonderful combination of Scheherazade and Caravan, which in Latin and jazz, which is going to round out the evening. And we're having dancers, we're having singers. It's a total entertainment evening.
Well, kind of two Middle Eastern things coming together there.
That's true, yes.
Now, didn't you tell me that you actually performed or toured in the Middle East as well, right?
Yeah, we wanted to get something ready to do for them, but we didn't know whether it would be like bringing coals to Newcastle. And we figured that they would expect us to do more presentational things, American jazz. So we did a few things, although Duke Ellington did write some music that was lent itself to the Middle East. He wrote the Far Eastern Suite. He wrote many different suites that were named after different parts of the world. Matter of fact, one of the habits that he was into was after somebody invited him to appear, he would write a suite to thank them. He wrote the Queen Suite. He wrote from African Suite, Asian, Afro-Eurasian Eclipse, the South American Suite.
I had known, I would have definitely had him over. This is pretty cool.
He would have written a suite about you. He could have done a whole thing.
That would have been wonderful.
Yeah.
To be commemorated by Duke Ellington. How cool is that? How cool is that, Les? Tell us exactly how cool.
Very cool.
That's good.
You know what? Why don't you tell Andy about your trip with the Duke to Russia?
Ah, yes. That was in the early days of the 70s, when it was not such a usual thing to get in and out of Russia, but it was part of an attempt for the piece to be done through the arts and the entertainment world. And so we were part of a State Department tour, and the first group that went over was the Alvin Ailey Company. And we were the second group that came over, and we went with the full band for a 5-week State Department tour. And we went to Moscow, to Leningrad, what was then Leningrad. We went to Rostov-on-Don. We went to several places, and it was an incredible situation because, you know, people stared at you, and especially they stared at your shoes because they the shoes, I guess, in Russia at that time were not like the shoes that we had.
Imagine if you brought some toilet paper.
They
would have went berserk.
This is one thing you learn to travel with a lot, your own. Make space for the toilet paper.
Yes, but they were known for a lot of missiles and not much toilet paper in Russia back then.
Well, yeah, but we were only going to be communicating on a musical level, and it was something that brought a lot of the people together. We even had jam sessions afterwards, unofficial jam sessions after the regularly scheduled concerts in Russia, and it created a camaraderie between the people. And as a matter of fact, one day I was walking down the street on Broadway, and I ran into this fellow who's selling pictures that looked familiar, and they were pictures of...
That he took out of your suitcase.
No. They were pictures of Duke Ellington in Russia, and I said, "How did you get these?" And he says, "I was there when you were there. And these, I took them, and I sell a lot of them here." So I said, you know, the world is an incredible thing. You never know who you're going to meet.
Wow. Now, back to the concert, because we want to give this some proper respect. What are some of the tunes people will be hearing?
Well, you'll be hearing a lot of familiar pieces. You'll be hearing Things Ain't What They Used to Be, which is one of the closing pieces that the Duke Ellington Orchestra used to play. It was written by, actually, my father, Mercer Ellington. We'll be hearing A-Train, of course. We'll be hearing a thing called Cottontail, which I love, because it was written, and one of the questions, actually, Duke Ellington asked John Hendricks to write lyrics to Cottontail, and John Hendricks asked Duke Ellington, why did you name this tune Cottontail? And he said, oh, you know, it's about those rabbits. And he said, what rabbits? He said, Flopsy, Mopsy, Cottontail, and Peter. So John got to work, John Hendricks, and wrote the lyrics of Cottontail now refer to the whole story of Flopsy, Mopsy, Cottontail, and Peter. And okay. So that's going to be on the program, and that's going to be sung. Hopefully, people will be able to understand the story.
Any tunes that focus on the lives of rabbits are generally okay with me.
Okay, well, then you'll love that one.
Okay. So, Les, what is your favorite Duke Ellington song?
Take the A-Train. I love that song. And I think the New York City should adopt it, or the MTA should adopt it.
First, they're going to have to fix up the train, I think.
Well, that's true. And they better pay for it, right?
Too bad Duke isn't around. I'm a lyricist. We could have made beautiful music together.
Yeah, especially to the renovations that are being made on the MTA.
Right. Okay. Now, the event is sponsored by the Bronx Council on the Arts, I believe, right?
Yes, yes.
So, what's the deal with that organization? What can you tell us about them?
Well, it's also it's a very big organization that has a lot to do with... it was the brainchild of the people at Woodlawn Cemetery who wanted to get more in tune with the famous people who are out there at Woodlawn. But I digress. I wanted to acknowledge that we now have Bobby Sinobody. It just came in.
The legendary. But for a drummer, you don't keep very good time, Bobby. What's going on? Yeah.
Yes, I do. It's just the traffic on Chambers is a little bit awry, but okay. I'm here on the fly.
One of the
I don't want to get into like rhyming because I just finished listening to Reynaldo Rey, who you probably knew was an old Harlem comedian.
Rhyme
in verse.
Oh, yeah.
But, so my bad jokes will have no effect on you at this point?
No, not at all, not at all.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I was trained, I was brought up on Red Fox, so.
Were you?
Yeah.
Yeah, Red could get a little raunchy on occasion. Not exactly Bill Cosby.
No.
Okay. Now, Bobby, many musicians are pretty much self-taught. I know I'm a rock and roller, and there was a lot of that. But you went to the Berklee School of Music, right?
Yes, I did. But, I always say that the best education I ever got was on the streets of New York City. Because when I was a kid, growing up in the South Bronx, there was a lot of music happening. At the time, radio was really rich. We had a great variety of jazz stations to choose from, Latin stations, and rock and popular music at that time was, at its height in terms of songwritings, particularly people like Laura Nero and, of course, all the great writers at Motown and in Philadelphia, et cetera, et cetera. I always say the greatest education I've ever gotten was on the streets of New York City.
What was that? You were in Fort Apache, right, where you grew up?
Yeah, in the Bronx, yeah.
So, aside from the musical education, what was it like there? It was a little rough, that neighborhood, wasn't it?
Well, I tell you, it was all of the stories you've heard about the burnings of the buildings, et cetera, that's all true. But the rich culture that was there, I mean, on any given day in the summertime, you would walk to one corner and you hear the sound of conga drums, people playing Cuban rumba. You walk to another corner, there's a bunch of Italian guys and black guys singing doo-wop. You go to another corner, there's people playing chess, another corner, people playing dominoes. And of course, in all the storefronts, especially the record stores, you'd hear music coming out because in those days, you could go into a record store and if a new record came out, say, by the Temptations, and you hadn't heard it, you could tell the record store owner, can I hear it first before I buy it? Or if I don't like it, I'll check something else out. So you had at that time this great R&B culture, great Latin music culture, and pop music culture because people like Sinatra and other crooners of the 40s and 50s were still very, very popular in the community. So you might go inside to buy your parents might go inside, and my parents might go inside to buy a Tito Puente record, but they might buy a Frank Sinatra record or something by Gladys Knight and the Pips. You know, so.
Okay, we're going to go to a commercial break again, but when we come back, we're going to hear some of the great people that Bobby played with, like people like Dizzy Gillespie and Tito Puente, what that experience was like, as well as his role in the upcoming June 8th extravaganza. But for now, check out these commercial messages.
Set your sights on us, 'cause it's the place to be. Come to Coney Island's magic by the sea. Hey kids, the time is now to show you our stuff. At Steeplechase Park, you'll never get enough. Coney Island, come for the pleasure. Come and you'll see. Brooklyn is grand, the ocean and the sand. Coney Island's part of history. So here we are. They come from near and they travel from far. A wonder we'll date. This fun place is great. So here we are. Coney Island, come for the pleasure. Just grab a bite. There's fireworks at night. The sky is lighting up for all the world to see. So here we are. They come from near and they travel from far. A steeplechase day. This fun place is great. So here we are.
Okay, we're back. I never knew I could hit that note, but having Bobby here inspired me. So, Bobby, you played with a lot of interesting people, Dizzy Gillespie being one of the all-time greats. What was he like to deal with?
He was very funny, as his moniker, but, you know, the thing about Dizzy is that for all of the innovations that he did in the 1940s, harmonically to stretch the limits of virtuosity in terms of jazz musicians, you would think after he became a senior citizen that he would stop thinking, but he was always talking about harmony and saying, hey, you could try this chord on this. He'd go to the piano. So he was always thinking. Great poker player, loved good cigars. And one of my nephews one time on a gig came and at the Village Gate while Art Blakey's band was playing, he's playing Dizzy. He taps me on the shoulder and he goes, hey, Uncle, you know, hey, Uncle Bob, you know, that guy, that Dizzy guy, is he famous? And I go, yeah, he's famous, Luigi, Louis, he's famous. And he goes, oh, yeah, because I just beat him for $20 in poker, you know. And you hear Dizzy in the background with Mike Longo screaming, hey, kid, come over here, the game ain't over yet, you know. So he was very down to earth. And the one thing I learned from him is what not to play. What not to play. It's very important what you don't play.
Dominoes, apparently.
There you go, Will.
Yeah. Okay, so I know you played with him. Tito Puente is one of the great names.
Right.
What was he like?
Well, Tito, same way. He had a New York sense of humor, very up. And the thing about Tito Puente that I learned was that no matter how many times he played Oye Como Va, which is his signature song, he always played it like it was the first time he ever played it. Sometimes you get jaded in this business, and people don't understand. When bands travel, you get excited to see one of your heroes, etc. But they've been playing those songs that you love a million times. Mercedes can attest to this,
yes,
to that with her grandfather. So, but you're expecting them to play it like, you know, to give you all that energy, etc., etc. And Tito would do that. He would never phone it in. And he had a few choice words once saying to the band, listen, if you're sick, go to the hospital. If you're tired, lay down. but if et cetera, et cetera. And then the final thing was, but if you're going to get in on the bandstand with me, you better play your freaking ass off. You know, so if I can say that, I just did.
Okay, we are not FCC regulated, so.
So we can say that. Yeah. Well, he didn't use the freaking word. He used something else, but that's what I learned from him.
Okay. Now, we were talking, some people were asking me if the Duke played with Sinatra and Tony Bennett and people like that. Did you get to play with any of those guys?
No, but I know Tony Bennett through my association with this legendary conga drummer, Candido Camero. They're best friends. So on occasion, I've had several great occasions to meet Mr. Bennett. Personally, the most recent one was this past April 30th. I got to play at the International Jazz Day at the United Nations, which is one of the highlights of my career. I mean, Herbie Hancock put this together with Quincy Jones, and sponsored by UNESCO. So every April 30th is International Jazz Day. They broadcast it over the internet all over the world. They had concerts in Paris and New Orleans, and the final concert was April 30th here in New York City, and I was one of the performers. So Tony Bennett opened the show, and he's brilliant as ever, brilliant as ever.
Now, my favorite jazz guys, a lot of them were the more kind of jazz fusion guys, like the Mahavishnu Orchestra. Do you ever deal with those guys?
Yes. They're a big influence on me because Billy Cobham.
I love Billy Cobham.
He's amazing. He's one of my main influences. He happens to be Panamanian. A lot of people don't know that. So there's always some Latin undertone in the things that he does. And I when I first heard the band and I heard him doing solos and doing fills, and I go, man, this guy, I wonder if he has any Latin influences, because I could tell by the licks that he does. There's got to be something there. And then when I found out he was from Panama, it all made sense. But we're friends and we're colleagues, and big, big, amazing influence on me.
Yeah, he was definitely one of my personal favorites. I saw them in the early 70s several times with John McLaughlin and Jan Hammer.
And I forgot the general. Jerry Goodman was the violin player. And
Rick Laird, I think.
The bass player, yeah.
That was a great band.
Yeah, yeah. I think Rick became actually an award-winning photographer.
Really?
John is still going strong. Billy lives both in Panama and in Switzerland, and he's very much in part of the Panama Jazz Festival there and big on education there also.
Oh, okay. Now, what is your role going to be in the big June 8th event?
Well, my multiple Grammy-nominated big band, the Multiverse Big Band, will be performing. It's a fantastic group of all-star musicians, some of the finest players in New York City. And it's a full big band, 5 saxophones, 4 trombones, 4 trumpets, myself on drums, congas, bongo, bass and piano. And our role in the concert is we're going to be showcasing.
Talk about multitasking.
Well, our role in the concert is showcasing Duke Ellington's music, but from the Latin perspective. So we'll be doing some songs. We'll be doing songs like Isfahan, which is an incredibly beautiful melody that was co-written by Billy Strayhorn in kind of this lilting rhythm called Afro Song, which is, if you can remember, like the rhythm that Desi Arnaz used in the song Babalu. Well, that's technically called Afro Song, and that's a Cuban rhythm. We're going to be doing it as that song Isfahan is that. Rain Check, another fabulous Ellington Strayhorn collaboration. We'll be doing it as a jazz mambo. We're also going to be doing I've Just Seen Her, which was a feature for Paul Gonzalez, the great tenor saxophonist in the Ellington Orchestra. And Paul was of, I think, Portuguese descent. And he that song was always a feature for him. It's a beautiful jazz ballad. We're going to do it as a Cuban bolero. And then we're going to close off the concert with this fabulous piece of music called Afro-Cuban Jazz Suite for Duke Ellington that the great Michael Philip Mossman, fantastic trumpeter, has composed. It's a tour de force piece, and it features a kaleidoscope of Afro-Cuban rhythms with various Duke Ellington-associated songs like The Mooch, I've Got It Bad and That Ain't Good, Sophisticated Ladies, et cetera, et cetera. A little excerpt of The Caravan in there, all as a kind of a medley, but it done in a highly arranged suite. And actually, it's going to be featured on our new album that's coming out in August called Multiverse. So we're very... This piece, every time we've performed it, people are astounded, and they've always asked me... People always ask, when are you going to record that, man? So we finally have. And we're going to be performing it this Friday at Lehman College.
Okay, now, how do people get tickets for this event? That's important to know.
Well, Les.
Oh, Les is taking over.
No, no.
Give the Jew the role when it comes to money. Come on.
First of all, the tickets are very affordable. $20. For $20, you're going to hear two great bands, great music. It's going to be really a wonderful concert, great dancers and vocalists. I mean, it's an experience that you don't hear anymore. You know, so if you're interested in any of that, you should make your way up there. It's a beautiful theater, and you can get tickets by calling 718-920-1469. That's 920-1469, 718, $20. And, or you can go online to www.thewoodlawncemetery.org. And it's a benefit for the Woodlawn Cemetery, Friends of Woodlawn Cemetery. And you ask, why is it a benefit for Woodlawn Cemetery, and why would these people, Bobby, and be interested in that? And that's because Duke Ellington is buried there.
The people are dying to hear Duke Ellington
yes,
music.
Yes, they're dying. And they go there, and they play every week, you know.
Well, anyway, I forgot to go ba-dum-bum, but anyway.
What kind of drummer are you? Where's my rim shot? What's going on?
Celia Cruz is also buried there, and lots of his Hispanic, many jazz artists and musicians are up there at Woodlawn. It's got really a fantastic history.
Yeah, the Woodlawn Cemetery is probably, architecturally, is one of the most beautifully designed cemeteries, not only in the country, but in the world. And it has more mausoleums and large gravestones than any other cemetery in the country. People like, besides Maestro Duke Ellington and Maestra Celia Cruz are there, but Miles Davis is there. Max Roach is buried there. Illinois Jack Hay is buried there. And many great sidemen, Sonny Greer, Duke Ellington's drummer, is buried there. Many great sidemen in the history of jazz and
Latin
music.
Got a great band at the cemetery.
Yeah.
That's right.
But you know what's amazing to me?
The Grateful Dead thought they were pretty good until now, but check this out.
Well, I had never been, from personal experience, I had never been to the cemetery until a few years ago when my godfather had passed away, one of my uncles, and so he requested to be buried there. So we go there, the family goes in, I'm going, wow, this place is incredible, it's beautiful. Then I find out that they have guided tours there because there are many philanthropists that were buried there, many heads of state, many pillars of business, captains of business are buried there. The Woolworth family is buried there, and I think the Carnegie family is buried there. In each one of the plots that they have, they built these elaborate structures to give tribute to all of these different people. So it's pretty, pretty, pretty amazing. And the Woodlawn Cemetery, the Friends of Woodlawn Cemetery, for years have been putting on concerts there and guided tours.
The plot keeps getting more elaborate, so the plot thickens, basically.
Exactly,
is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Okay, good.
Exactly. So this concert, it's only natural that they would put this incredible concert together. And I must say, it's not only two of the finest big bands in the country, but you're going to hear some of the finest jazz singers in the country, too, like Antoinette Montague, some incredible dancers. So it is like what Maestro Ellington would put on in the past, an extravaganza that it not only has music, but dance and vocals. So,
okay. Sounds like a great night for measly $20.
Well, Marion Cowings and Antoinette and who knows what else. I know that there's going to be a lot of ballroom dancers and a couple tap dancers. Mm-hmm. And so we're trying to give a variety of everything during the evening just to make sure that people understand that this music that you listen to ordinarily, maybe there are some audio files that, you know, they just want to get into the music, but it's performance music. It's alive. It can be, you know, still viable to the music that we hear today. That is not such classical Latin and jazz music.
Okay, we need to squeeze in one more commercial break, and when we come back, we will be talking a little more about the 8th as well as the career of Bobby Sanabria. We'll be back.
Would you like to know what's going on in the Italian-American community and stay in touch, even if you don't live in Little Italy? There's a way to do it. There's a great newspaper out called GIA, the Giornale Italo-Americano. This newspaper is distributed nationally and comes out weekly, and you can subscribe by going to their website at www.giamondo.com, that's GIAMONDO.com, or call 718-592-2196. Check out GIA for all your information on what's happening in the Italian-American community. It's published in both Italian and English. It's a great way to read and follow up and practice your Italian as well. Check out GIA on the internet at www.giamondo.com. GIA newspaper, the Italian-American newspaper for today.
If you love jazz, check out These Things We Dig, new CD by jazz sax, flute, and clarinet recording artist James Aldean on Sexton Records. James Aldean has recorded 7 CDs for Sexton Records and appears regularly in the New York metropolitan area, including the great venue, the Whiskey Cafe. These Things We Dig features some of the best jazz and bebop styles, with James fronting the band, complemented by such great players as Mike Fonella, Phil Jones, Bob De Benedette, Ron Naspo, and Wayne Dunton. You can get this new CD from Sexton Records by going to www.sexton.com. That's C-E-X-T-O-N.com. You can find out more about James Aldean at www.jldeanorchestra.com. For the best in jazz, it's Sexton Records, the audiophile jazz record label. Sexton.com.
We're back, and we have some of our best conversations during the break. And Bobby mentioned that a lot of the Latin rhythms were taught by Jews in New York, and that's where I learned from a gentleman named Joel Rothman. And you said you know Joel, right?
Well, everybody knows Joel because he's written some very famous drum books.
And they look like children's books.
Yeah, yeah. He's got a variety of. I would say he has, to my knowledge, about 50 books. He probably has more that he's written that are used as standardized texts to teach anything from reading to coordinated, what we call coordinated independence, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, he'll take one little area because he also writes children's books.
No, I didn't know that.
So he would take that kind of concept, and it would be like a short book, like 20 pages on some small aspect of drumming, three right. against two for jazz,
right.
you know, and he'd write a 20-page book on it and sell it for $2. And I used to have to take those to the post office and mail them to, like, Ireland and Angola for him. And I get some free drum lessons because I studied with him for 2.5 years in the 70s.
That's great.
But there was a time when there was a place here in New York called the Palladium where everybody had to go and learn and get their, you know,
Mambo test,
fix. Their fix and their tests. Because if you couldn't make it on the floor of the Palladium, you couldn't make it anywhere.
You're not talking about the Palladium that I knew, right? That what was originally the Academy of Music?
No, not the one on 14th Street.
No, okay.
No.
That was the Palladium that became the big rock club. We're talking about the home of the Mambo from 1948 to 1966. It was on West 53rd Street and Broadway, and it was run by an ex Jewish tailor.
He used to be Jewish.
Yeah, no. What? No, I'm sorry.
He finally wised up. Huh?
A Jewish ex-tailor. No, thank you for correcting me, Maxwell Hyman.
Taylor doesn't even seem like a Jewish name.
I attribute the longevity and the continuation of the Latin interest in Latin music, especially like in the festivals that they have, to Jewish women.
Oh.
I for some reason.
What did we do?
The Jewish women are there. Like, you go to the outdoor concerts when they're going to be having this summer at the band shell at Lincoln Center. Go and see and ask. And if you take a consensus of opinion and go around the floor, see how many are Jewish women and how many are Latin women.
That's me and Les know all about this. We're members of the tribe.
Well, actually, you know, my name, Sanabria, is a Sephardic name.
Really?
So even though I was raised Catholic, it must have happened probably centuries ago when during the Inquisition, we became conversos, I guess. But
not a bad move back then, from what I hear.
Yeah. It helped us survive, I guess. And then my ancestors just moved to Puerto Rico. But the thing that Mercedes just mentioned, the Jewish community, they really fell in love with Cuban-based music. But not only Cuban-based music, they fell in love with Argentinian tango, anything Latin. Because Jewish culture, first of all, has always been very progressive, has always had an element of celebration to it, and in Jewish culture, people love to dance. And when they came here as immigrants, they fell in love with all forms of music that had soul, black music like jazz and R&B, and of course, all forms of Latin music. And in terms of like R&B, most of the early rock hits were written by New York Jews, you know.
Lieber and Stoller.
Exactly. Bill Graham, who used to
write. My songs are not as well known, but I do write with Dave Stoller, though.
Great. Well, Bill Graham, who used to be the owner of Fillmore East and was Carlos Santana's manager and Quicksilver Messenger Service and the Grateful Dead's manager, when he built both clubs, Fillmore East and Fillmore West in San Francisco, he based the design on the Palladium Ballroom because he was a mambo nick. You have beatniks, you have jazz bows, and then you have mambo nicks. And most of the mambo nicks were Jews who loved to go to the Palladium Ballroom and dance.
A mambo nick? I've never heard of that.
Yeah, mambo nicks.
I used to get into such trouble with my father because I would stay out late at the Palladium, beyond my curfew. But I would risk it because it was such a great happening place, and then I would be scolded by, I don't know, he would have me, I couldn't do certain things, you know, but it was worth it.
Now, both your parents were piano players, right?
Well, no.
You know how I know that? Someone wrote in, actually, to tell me that.
And actually, my father...
People are lying to me.
Well, no, both my parents. My mother was not a piano player.
Oh, Duke's parents were both piano players. Okay.
Yes. And okay. I believe that my great-grandmother... great-great-grandmother, Daisy, she might have even taught, because a lot of times people of color in Washington, D.C. at the time, in order to get along in any form, would be able to teach to just as a bridge to get into the music. You know, if they didn't perform, they would try to teach and that way be somewhat connected to the music.
Is the Ellington name ever hard to live up to?
Not for me, because I'm a woman. I think it was difficult for my father. I think it was difficult for him to follow, because everybody expected him to follow into his father's footsteps, and it was a very, very, very difficult path for him. But I think that he did a very good job. He carried the name. He got us through the show on Broadway, Sophisticated Ladies. And that was an excellent show, which even if it was brought back today, it would be probably one of the biggest hits that we've had. And it's just a double-edged sword. It really is.
Okay, I'm going to have you guys back, because I barely got through half of my stuff here. You guys are an easy interview. I attribute most of that to Les.
It's all his fault.
Well, we'd like to remind everybody the concert is this Friday at the Lovinger Theater in Lehman College. It's a beautiful, intimate space. The acoustics are fantastic. You're going to see two fantastic big bands, two of the finest big bands in the country, interpreting Maestro Ellington's music. And the finale will be a special arrangement that Frank Owens, the musical director of the Ellington Legacy Orchestra, has written, combining Scheherazade and Juan Tizol's Caravan. And so both bands will be on stage, a total of 40 musicians.
That sounds like your basic Grateful Dead Allman Brothers concert from my youth, but a little different. Okay, now we go out listening to my music, which is nice. Okay, well, that was a great show. We will be back next week with a show on New York nightlife. and the FCC regulations will definitely not be in effect. But until then,
thank you for having us.
Thank you for joining us. Until then, we are gone.
You are listening to the Centanni Broadcasting Network, CENTANNI Broadcasting.com, in high definition digital stereo.